HTML advanced representation. And also I told you about various things you could do with OSML advanced representations, like evaluate them numerically, consider expansions in a parameter, or even in some cases sum up the entire expansion to get an analytical result. And so I'm going to continue along these lines and tell you a little more what you can do with those Mellin-Barnes formulas. But the main theme today is that I'm going to show you how you can automate these things, or most of these things, on a computer, and specifically using Mathematica. So I'm going to be using the computer quite a lot. I see the resolution has changed here a little bit, unfortunately, so let's see if I can get this. Well, I guess we... So this page is rather useful, so maybe you want to note down the address, because it contains... so it's a web page by Alexander Smirnov, and it contains a lot of useful packages which are available for Mathematica. So specifically today, I'll be using this mb.m package, and I'll explain a little more what you can, do with this, and also the mbasymptotics.m will be very useful today. So if you're following the lecture of a computer, it might be useful to just download these two files and put them into your working directory, because then you could just follow what I'm doing directly. Now, to start with, I'd like to remind you of this example we had last time. So we looked at a specific integral, which is really a toy example of this triangle integral here, where we had two massless particles, momentum p1, p2, interacting each other through a massive particle of mass m. And we multiply this by s, where s was just a Mandelstam variable, p1 plus p2 squared. And so we found a Mellin-Barnes formula for that. So we wrote this as some contour integral dz over 2 pi I, gamma minus z, gamma 1 plus z cubed, divided by gamma of 3 plus 2z, and then x to the minus 1 minus z, where we had that x was just the ratio dimensionless variable m squared over s. And so we also found that this contour here, it went from minus I infinity to plus I infinity, and the real part of z, it had to be smaller than 0 and bigger than minus 1. So just to remind you where this requirement came from, because that's very important. So in deriving this formula here, we used various, we integrated several times. So there was one first integration where we introduced the Mellin-Barnes parameter, which gave one of these constraints. And then there was a second integration where we integrated out the Feynman parameters. And so if you think about what the allowed... when these integrals make sense, when these integrals actually converge, that leads you to this constraint here. Now, in practice, you don't always have to go back to all of the integrations you did to derive these Mellin-Barnes formulas, because in practice, you can this information is still kept in the formula and it's encoded in these gamma functions. So a very convenient way to remember such a this condition here is to look again at where the poles of these gamma functions are. So remember, we did this last time, where the poles of gamma z, gamma minus z, which lie here, and we had the poles of gamma 1 plus z, which we have one here at minus 1, minus 2, etc. And the criterion is, this criterion here is just that the this complex integration, the real part of that integration is separating the poles of the gamma function with minus z in the argument and the gamma function of plus z in the argument. And that's actually very general. So more generally, if you had a bunch of gamma functions, more than these, then the criterion would always be this, that you can find a contour which separates the two sets of gamma functions. So in general, you could have a bunch of gamma functions, say gamma of a minus z, gamma of B minus Z here, and here you have some gamma of Z plus Z, gamma of D plus Z, and so on and so forth. And the criterion would be that you can find a contour in between such that the poles are separated. So actually that will be very important also when we discuss dimensional regularization, where this criterion is not always, well, you have to be careful about how to satisfy this criterion. All right, so what I'd like now, however, is just to take this example and see how we can implement this on the computer and what we can do with it. Basically go through the things I've outlined in the last lecture and implement them on the computer. And to do this, I also want to remind you of what we want to do is to also compare this to the analytical solution. So this is, of course, a toy example, so it's really very simple, and we could do everything using just the Feynman parameterization and just integrate everything analytically. But it's, let me stress that this method can also be applied to higher loops, and there it's really efficient, and it allows you to give some results in cases where you couldn't obtain otherwise results, or where it would be very, very difficult if you just used Feynman parameterization or attempted to integrate directly. But of course, in this toy example, it's easy to find the analytic solution, and I wrote it down yesterday, but let me just write it down again for reference. So it's 1/2 log squared of some argument, which was 1 minus 1 plus 4, square root of 1 plus 4x, 1 plus square root of 1 plus 4x. So so that would be useful immediately for us in, it will allow us to compare with the Mellin-Barnes formulas. All right, so so I hope that people who want to follow this on the computer manage to download these files. So what I'll do now is just basically do this here online. So I guess you already know how to load a Mathematica package, so we just load this MB package here. And now the first thing to do is just to define this this Mellin-Barnes integrand. So we just input these gamma functions, gamma of minus z, gamma of 1 plus z cubed, and the argument x to the minus 1 minus z. And you can, by convention, we leave out the 1 over 2 pi I. I've got the gamma of 3 plus 2z. All right. Now, so that's the first part. Now, the second part is actually to specify what the integration contours are. So we've already discussed that the allowed contours are to choose real part of z between 0 and minus 1. But actually, there's a convenient function in this package MB which allows to find this criterion automatically. And that function is called MB rules. So that's something very, very useful. So I just called up the help for MB rules. So you see, it as arguments, it takes an integrand. If you tell me how to do it, I'll be happy to do so. Maybe. Sorry, what's that? The lower edge of the window. So what do I do here? Oh, this. Ah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, very good. Is that better? Bigger? Yeah. Even bigger? Okay. All right. That's pretty big. Okay. So, good. So I hope everybody can read this now. So this MB rules takes us as arguments an integrand, which we just defined. There are constraints, which we may use later, but maybe not now. And also there's another parameter, fixed variables, which we're not going to use immediately. This is if you have an integral which depends on some parameters. But for us, it's just the only variable in the integrand is z, in the gamma, which appears in the gamma function, is z, the integration variable. So we'll just give empty lists here, actually. So let us just call this MB rules. Argument is the integrand, and let's try to do some empty lists. And all right, so we got some output here. And so you see it shows for us some allowed value of Z. It somehow randomly chose Z equals to minus 1/2. Any other value between 0 and minus 1 would have been okay. But so that's very convenient because we didn't have to think. So let me just call this int, int is fine. So this, we can call this rules. And now we want to put these together, and the syntax for this is to let's just call this I1 MB, it's the first integral. So it's called MB int. So you can see it's recognized. And we just have to put together these two things, the integrand and the rules. So that's how integrals are typically represented by MB. And right, so now what we can do with this, we having this representation, we might want to just evaluate it numerically. So there's a function for this, and it's called MB integrate. Oops. Maybe we don't want to read all of this. So the key thing for a moment is that's written here. So it takes as argument a list of integrals and kinematics, a list of kinematic requirements. So here it would be, say, MB integrate. Now, it wants as argument a list, so that's a very typical mistake to do, which can get you confused. So you have to really get a list. So since we have one integral, I make a list of this. And as kinematics, now we can choose our favorite kinematical point, say x should be 1.2, for example. And indeed, so here it spits out some numerical value. Now how about comparing this to the actual analytical answer? Let's see if it's correct. Let's just see the analytical. Just type this in, 1/2 log of these things squared. That's 4x. I think I got the sign wrong. So there should be a minus sign here. Define this function and see if I remembered it correctly. Oops, something wrong. So what's wrong? It doesn't look good. Okay, sorry about that. Maybe I misremembered the thing. Is this what I wrote today? Is this the same as I wrote yesterday? Because I thought I got it right yesterday. So maybe you can check. Maybe I got some sign wrong or something. How can this become next? Excuse me? Yeah? No, I guess, well, it has to be, let me just, so luckily I typed this in before, so let me see if I can spot what I did wrong this time. I guess I got some sign wrong here, so that should be, I guess maybe it's just this sign. Oh, yeah, so like this, it's for positive x, this should be positive, yeah. Sorry about that. Let's see. Oh, yeah. Very good. So, it's just this sign upstairs, which is the other way around. Sorry about that. Like this, you can see that for positive x, this function is actually positive. Okay. I think this is just the canonical way of representing things by mathematics. It doesn't really spell out all the numbers. So now you can ask about the accuracy here. So we could call this value 1, I could see, and call this value 2, and we can take the difference if you like. Oops, that's not good. So we could do value 1 minus value 2 to see how far they agree. So of course, so now in MB integrate, there are some options. And you, so it's just like in N integrate, the standard integration function in Mathematica, you can have some options and increase the numerical precision. But I guess this is the default option, which is already pretty good. But this can be increased. Now speaking of the numerical precision, there's one comment I want to make, which is, you see, this contour integral we're doing, if you look at the if you look at this diagram here, so the value you've chosen, z equals minus 1/2, is a very good one, because it's far away from these two poles. So why is that important? Well, of course, the value of the integral is the same for any value of z, 0, any value of the real part of z, which is between 0 and minus 1. However, if you integrate numerically and you integrate close to this pole here, you will have a region of integration where the integrand is very big. So there will be a cancellation between big numbers. And so that's potentially dangerous and can potentially decrease your numerical accuracy. So in general, it's convenient to choose the real part of the integration variable to be very far away from the poles. And in fact, so this MB package is very clever. It automatically tries to do this. So even if we started with a real part of Z, which was very close to the pole here, it would first shift the contours and try to get as far away as possible. I think that's important to know, because in some other cases where you have where the numerical precision is not so good, you might want to look at this. So the shifting contours, this first printout here, is actually telling you that it's trying to implement that. And by the way, this is the standard output here. If you do this a couple of times and you get annoyed by all the output, you just might want to add this. So then it's more silent. Right. That's an easy way to get numerical numbers out of your Mellin-Barnes integrals. Now I want to come back to a comment I made in the last lecture, which is that these gamma functions, they increase very rapidly in the complex plane. So last time I told you that you could actually approximate this integral here by integrating not from minus infinity to plus infinity, but just in a small region in the complex plane. So I'd just like now to try how this would work. So what we can do is we can just take this integrand we defined here. Now we change variables, so we just integrate. So we say z is our favorite real part minus 1/2 plus I y, and now we integrate over y. In the change of variables, there's a factor of I. We shouldn't forget this 1 over 2 pi I if we do that. And now we can just take this and n integrate. So just the standard integration function in Mathematica. And so now we can try. So in principle, we should integrate from minus infinity to plus infinity. But so I told you it's probably going to be a good approximation just to integrate, for example, from minus 5 to 5. And also we need to specify the value of x. So let's put it to 1.2 again. Let's call this valve 3. And there you are. So it's, it doesn't look too bad. Let's compare it to analytical value. It's not as you can see, it's not as good as what we had before, but it's already coming quite close. So it's just to illustrate this point. Okay, so I guess that's pretty much what I want to say about numerical integration for now. So it's all implemented in MB using this nice function MB integrate. Now this example was a little special because we did a one-dimensional integral. In general, you can also do higher-dimensional integrals pretty much without problems if they're not too high in dimension, say 2, 3, 4 or so. You can get results out of that. In order to do this, there's one tricky point, which is that for higher-dimensional integrals, MB, it uses some other stuff. So in order to get that to work, one has to install some things which are down here on the web page. So and in particular, well, it's not a big problem, but usually it takes a couple of days to get it working, unfortunately. So so if you want to do it, I'm very happy to try to help you. But irrespectively of I mean, it always seems to take a while. So but it's pretty useful. So. Okay. Right. Okay. Any questions so far about this, this numerical evaluation? Yeah. Yes, I mean several million bond centers. Yes, yes. And that's really typically you don't have so many of them actually. Right. So now let's actually come to. Let's see how we can get rid of some of these. Well, here we just have one integral. How we can get rid of this integral. Now, so what I'd like to do is discuss this this feature which we had last time. So we have this Mellin-Barnes integral, and in principle, we can close the contour on one or the other side and get an expansion. For example, we discussed last time what happens when x is small, and we got an expansion which is increasingly accurate as we included more and more terms. And now this is really very nice because this is all, you can all automate this. This procedure of closing the contour and picking up a pole, you can all program this in Mathematica, and it's actually all been done already. So there's this other package, MB asymptotics. Okay, it doesn't give any output, it seems. And now this package actually does exactly that. It does exactly this asymptotic expansion. So let me just see this. How's it called again? I'm sorry. I should probably remember this. But, oh, yeah, of course. Okay. I'm sorry. It's called MB asymptotics. Right. Let's see if there's some help to help me remembering. Oops. Right. Very good. Right, so again, it takes some integrals. So I1MB. All right, so now it wants to know what variable we take the limit in. So for us, it's x. Indeed, we want to expand it around x equals 0. And it wants to know to what order we need to expand. So for example, we could want to expand just to the order where we just to the finite order where we drop all terms which vanish at x equals to 0. So so let's try to do this, and that didn't work. And I think it's one of these annoying features that here it doesn't want a list. So let's try it again. Aha, okay, very good. So so you see that's exactly what we discussed last time. Maybe we can show it on the blackboard. So we discussed last time that as x is small, the leading contribution actually just comes from the residue of this pole here. And that's exactly what Mathematica gave us, what MB asymptotics gave us. And it disregarded all the other contributions because they would vanish as x goes to 0. But it's very nice that this is just done automatically. So we didn't have to think at all. We could just plug in the MB, the Mellin-Barnes representation, get this automatically. And but now we can also continue and say, okay, expand to the next order. And you see there's also a linear term here, x times log, and so on and so forth. And in this case, since we had a one-dimensional integral to start with, a one-dimensional Mellin integral, since for each term we take a pole, what we get is just a function. So there are no more integrations left. We didn't have to do any integrations. So here it's still in the form mb int, but you see there's no integration variable. So it's really just a function. So if you wanted, we could just replace this, could just get rid of this stuff here. So you could say if you have some MB int where there's no real integration, we just replace it by the argument. And say we don't want the list either. So, oops, did I drop something here? Let's see, it's didn't quite. Oh, okay, sorry. So let's go back a step. So actually what we got here, you see, is a list of things. Now, there's a very useful command which allows you to combine several things, so which are of the same type. So that's MB merge. So it simplifies a little bit. So you see, since these are all zero-dimensional integrals, no integrals, it just combines them. And, okay, having done this, now we want to get rid of this this integral. Right. Alternatively, we could have applied plus to the list we had previously. And now we can say it's just the first element. Okay. Just to make sure, let's compare this with the analytical value. So we can do a series expansion here. So to the order 3, if you like. Around 0. Let's just put this in a canonical form, normal, and let's say expand. And let's also expand what we had up here. And they're equal, of course. So you see that's very convenient. And here you could just go to any order you like by replacing the 3 by any other order. So that's really very useful. And notice that I've already said it, but notice that although we had an integral, a Mellin-Barnes integral to start with, doing this asymptotic limit, it undid the integral. So in the end, we just ended up with a function. We didn't have to do any integration at all, and everything was automatic. Okay, so I think that's what I wanted to say about this example here. So now let me go on to make a couple of more comments. What you can do specifically when you have integrals in which are dimensionally regularized, and then make also some other comments. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Okay. Why not do it? Well, I guess this, let's see what happens, this integral. Just first think. You can probably say what happens at large S. Sorry, did you say large S or large M? Large X, you said. Right, so that's large X is, large X, you could say it's zero momentum, right? So we can first think what happens in this case. So we multiply by this overall S here, so that's going to vanish. But if we disregard this, then this integral here at zero momentum, it turns into a massive tadpole, right? So it will just give some number over the correct dimension in the mass. So so from that we can see it would vanish linearly. So, but okay. Yes, indeed. Absolutely. So we can just change variables. I just discussed what happens physically when you take this limit. So what to expect in this limit is a linear vanishing. Let's just do it. So you see what you'd have to do is, as you say, you just change variables to 1 over x. Now, that reminds me that I wanted to make a comment that MB asymptotic sometimes is a little picky about the form of the input that you give. And generally, it's very good to do power expand, to have something which is really the variable you want to set to 0 to 1 power. So that if you, in other cases, sometimes you can get some error messages, which are often because it's not in this form. Okay, but having this now, we can just, let's just do MB asymptotics again. So this is now the inverse limit, and as we said, it has no finite term, but so here's your linear term. So the 1/2 would come out of this tadpole integration. But it's, so you can see it's really no, No, you should do that. Okay, thanks for that question. So, right, so now before, let's switch back to the blackboard for a moment. And I last time I didn't quite finish the fourth point of my list of useful things you could do in MB, which is the epsilon expansion. So the epsilon expansion, if you have some integral which is defined in t equals 4 minus 2 epsilon dimensions, which is very often the case. And this is actually really the main raison d'etre of this package MB. So let's see how this arises. So I already told you that in general you can look at the gamma functions that appear in your Mellin-Barnes representation to figure out what the right choice of contour is. Now, if you have divergent integrals, for d equals 4, for example, it can happen to you, or it will happen to you, that there's no choice of contour that is allowed. How could this arise? So imagine you had such a divergent integral. You didn't know it was divergent, maybe, so you computed it naively in four dimensions. Typically, what can happen is that you find in your Mellin-Barnes integral something like gamma of minus z times gamma of z. But now looking at the poles of that, what happens is we see there's one pole, which is now first pole of this gamma of z, which would move to zero, and it would coincide with this pole of gamma of minus z. So because of that, in that case, there's no space between the two gamma functions to put the contour, and hence the conclusion. Now, the way to resolve this, one way to resolve this, is to set d to 4 minus 2 epsilon, and then doing the calculation, typically what will happen is that you get something like gamma of minus z times gamma of z plus epsilon. So if we now draw again the picture in the complex plane, we have the we have a poles of gamma of minus z, and now the poles of gamma of epsilon plus z, and the first pole is at minus epsilon, of course. So in this case, then we can choose the real part of z again in this. There's an allowed real part, and it has to be in this small region between between 0 and minus epsilon. So in my example, I want to choose epsilon to be negative. Sorry, in this example, I want epsilon to be positive. Right. So, you typically know in DIMREC what the sign of epsilon is supposed to be, depending on whether you regularize UV or infrared divergences. So in this case, well, I just made this up, but this usually follows from your calculation. So you see that in that case, then the this deformation epsilon allows you to define a contour. Now, let's think about what happens if you want to set epsilon to zero. Well, now, again, there's this problem. We cannot naively put epsilon to zero because then the choice of the contour would be disallowed. So that's not possible. So before we can send epsilon to zero, we somehow have to make sure that this problem doesn't arise. But there's an easy way out. So you see, we can just, again, use complex analysis and say, well, before taking this epsilon to zero limit, we just move the contour to somewhere where it's safe, where it's not affected by this gluing of poles. So the way out here would be to say, well, we deform the contour over there to that region for real part of z bigger than zero. And after having done this, we can just safely take the limit epsilon goes to zero. So in this example, we just deform the integration contour. Well, in doing so, we'd pick up a pole at z equals zero of gamma of minus z. So how would this pole look like? Well, there can be potentially other terms in the integrand, so we'd have the pole here, and to compute the residue, we'd have to put z equals to zero there. So this term would definitely be proportional to gamma of epsilon times some other stuff. So we'd have this first contribution of the residue. Have residue plus the contour integral, where now the real part of z is bigger than zero. And so now, as I said, in this term here, there's no problem anymore. It's not a problem that the poles will glue as epsilon goes to zero. It will still be well defined. So here we can just start doing the expansion. It will just be a Taylor in general Laurent expansion. And similarly, in this term here, we can also take the Laurent expansion. And as you can see already, the sum of epsilon will produce a pole in epsilon. So then in this form, now it's safe to carry out the Laurent expansion. In epsilon. And so in doing so, you'll get a list of Malin Barnes integrals, and also you will have for each power in epsilon, say imagine the leading powers in this case could be 1 over epsilon, you'd have a list of Mellin-Barnes integrals, and then so it's the same for next power and so on and so forth. So that allows you to, depending on the order to which you want to compute, it allows you to stop the expansion at the desired order. All right. And so now, just as in the case of the discussion of the asymptotic limit, all of this is implemented in Mathematica. So this is just a function in mb dot m. It's called mb continue. And I'm going to show you an example later, which exactly does this first part of continuing the contour to an allowed region. And then there's a second function, mb expand, which allows you to do this Laurent expansion. All right. Since we're already discussing parameters and deformations, let me make a related comment. Because so far I've been telling you how to deal with scalar integrals where you just have propagators in the denominator. But how to deal with numerators? How to deal with numerators? And that's actually related. So imagine you have some loop integral. So previously we discussed propagators, but now we could also have some numerator upstairs. Well, actually, we can just very simply incorporate these numerators in what we've already been discussing by saying, well, a numerator like this is just a propagator with a negative power. So this I could say is just a propagator with power. So we gave them names. Let's say this is A1 with power A1 equals minus 1. But then if you go through the steps we've done previously, when introducing the Feynman parameters, remember there's a gamma of A1, 1 over gamma of the power of a propagator. So now this in our case, it would be a gamma of minus 1, so which is 1 over infinity, so which is 0. So obviously something's gone wrong there. And this is really just a pathological problem. So really what we should do is that some hypothesis introduced when introducing the Feynman parameters wasn't valid. So in order to cure this, it's actually very similar to this idea in DIMRIC. We just introduce an analytical deformation. So what to do is to say, well, A1, it's not minus 1. Let's say it's minus 1 plus delta, where delta is some analytic parameter. So in doing this, then when we would have solved this first problem here, so that then we could safely introduce the Feynman parameterization and safely go to the Mellin-Barnes formula. And what we would encounter then is actually something absolutely identical to the situation in DIMRIC here, that one cannot naively take delta to 0, but before taking that limit, one has to analytically continue. And the net effect of that, at the end of the day, is that that one, by analytically continuing, just as we got a delta function here, sorry, a gamma which produced a pole here, we'd get a pole in delta, which then compensates this one over infinity here. So in doing so, everything is okay. At the end of the day, we get some finite result. So at the end of the day, we can again use MB continue and find some finite result as delta goes to 0, and obviously also should be independent of delta. So that's an easy way you can deal with numerators. All right. Okay, so I've two more comments. How in some cases now, when you at the end of the day you still have some Mellin-Barnes integrals left, how you can actually carry out the summation. So first comment on that, and second comment is how to, since we've mainly been discussing one loop, is how we can use this at higher loops, which is really straightforward. So basically, the main message is we really only have to understand how to do one loop, and then you can do any loop order, really. So, but let me first comment on summation. So I told you in principle what one can always do is close the integration contour for some regime of the integration variables, and obtain a series expansion of the function you have. And of course this can be in general a complicated problem, but say let's imagine just for the sake of the argument that we have a one scale problem. And in that case, very often also you have an idea of what kind of functions you expect and what kind of arguments these functions have. So let's just say that, as in the case of this triangle example, we just have one argument. And typically what we expect in calculations and quantum field theory is that we have the type of functions that you have is not so complicated. Maybe we expect logarithms to some power, polylogarithms like this, or also generalizations thereof. And so all of these functions, of course, they have series expansions. So a strategy would be that we could take our Mellin-Barnes integrals, derive a series expansion in a way I showed you with MB asymptotics, and then compare and see if they match the expansions of these functions, and thereby sum up the expansions again. So let me also say that this is related to Christian Vergoux's lectures, who will talk about such kind of functions and generalizations thereof and technology to deal with them. So what we want to do is to sum up these sum up the series expansions. And so for that also, there are packages available. So there's one which is called XSummer, which unfortunately is not implemented in Mathematica, I think in some other language. So it's due to Sven Moch and Peter Uwe. And there's some other packages called Sigma by Schneider. And something else which is very useful is in fact a reference I was going to give you. There's a book by Smirnov, which is called something like Evaluating Feynman Integrals. Which in fact is a very useful reference in general for what I've been discussing and many other things. Toward the end of the book, there are some tables of series expansions or summation formula for such functions, which are very helpful in this respect. So all of this is just are some references. So let me just give one example which might typically arise. Which in fact we had to evaluate when we computed some two-loop diagram like this. So this is a little bit like this triangle example I showed you previously. So we had some function which in this case depended on Mandelstam variables and the mass, and we computed the small mass expansion of this integral, and in fact everything came out without having to do any integrations except for one. One integral. So I think this is a nice example that in order to compute such a two-loop integral, you actually just need to compute one single Mellin-Barnes integral, which is the following. So let me just write it down. So we had some integral from the real part being 1/2, and it's really a simple integral. So we had x in our case was s over t. So we had x to the z, gamma cubed of minus z, gamma of z, gamma of 1 plus z, dz. So as I said, you can just take the just expand this, say, for small x, and see what series expansion you get, and then discover that it's the same as the expansion of the following function, pi squared LR2 of minus x, log squared x LI2 minus x minus 4 log x LI3 of minus x plus 6 LI4 of minus x. So certainly there are many more complicated examples and formulas available, but I just wanted to give you an impression of what kind of formulas you need for a typical problem. So you see, using these the methods I've outlined, it's absolutely trivial to compute this integral. You just need to everything is automated. You just press a button, you get the whole expansion, and the only integral you need to think about basically is this one. And even this could be if you wanted to, you could probably automate it using some other packages. Okay, now the other comment I promised was what to do about higher loops, because really so far it seems as if I've only discussed one loop, because I told you how to do all of this for one loop integrals. So what if you have some higher loop integral? Say you have some integral like this. Like a free loop box integral, or any other integral you might imagine. So now there are basically two strategies. One is to introduce Feynman parameters for the whole diagram and carry out the d-dimensional integrations. which again, in principle, you can do, and you will get some formula with many Feynman parameters and some Feynman integrand, which then you need to factorize by introducing Mellin-Barnes parameters. So that is one way of proceeding. Another way of proceeding, which in fact by experience turns out to be very convenient, is a so-called loop-by-loop approach. So that is also why I was saying we only really need to understand how one loop is working. So in the loop-by-loop approach, you basically look at one loop sub-integrals. So for example, here you could look at this encircled one loop sub-integral here, and introduce a Feynman parameterization for it, and then Mellin parameterize, and see what you've got left over. So we could do this here. I'll tell you what the answer is. So to parameterize this integral here, it turns out you need three Mellin-Barnes variables like this. It has some 2 pi I cubed. You'd have some function g, which is a product of gamma functions. The details are not particularly important here. And then what you'd have, so just for definiteness, let me say this is momentum p1, p2, p3, p4, say. Now, then obviously, if you're going to have something which depends on these variables, so we'd have s to some power, in this case, 1 plus z1 plus z3. And then what we'd have left is, in fact, basically a two-loop diagram. Something which looks like this, where basically these propagators are the same as before. So, in fact, let me use a different color, maybe. So what's important here is what the powers of these propagators are. So typically, we want to compute something where the powers of the propagators are 1, right? So here, since we've just copied, these powers are still just 1. But now over here, since we've done this computation, this propagator here, it came out of the calculation where we Feynman parameterized and then factorized the integrand. Now, because of this, the power of this propagator, it depends on the z variables. And in fact, here it's, let's see, it's 1. Oh, sorry, got something wrong. So this power is 1 plus z1 plus z3. In fact, there are two other factors which come out of this calculation, which multiply what we had already, which lead to a 1 minus z3 up here, and a 1 minus z1 up here. And this power, in fact, is z2. So now you see what happened is that you've basically managed to transform this one-loop sub-integral into a Mellin-Barnes formula, times something which is a two-loop integral, but with modified powers of the propagators. But now for this two-loop integral, we can just apply the same reasoning as before, because because we have general formulas to apply to one loop where the powers of the propagators are not really important. They just change some arguments in the gamma functions. So it's clear that we can just reiterate this procedure until we get to a one-loop integral, which then we also do, and then we'll have something exactly of a form that we discussed previously. So that's why this is a very convenient strategy, because you only ever need to remember the one-loop formulas. And it turns out that it also gives you rather efficient Mellin-Barnes representations. Yeah, good. So now, depending on the problem, you may want to think about how this can be done most efficiently, because for particular problems, maybe a particular way of doing this is most efficient. But also, there exist Mathematica implementations of this, which were also available on this website, and one package is called Ambre. So I guess this means automatic Mellin-Barnes representation or something like that. Which you can which can do this automatically. All right. So since I just have 5 minutes, maybe in the remaining 5 minutes, I could just quickly show you how this epsilon expansion works in MB, because that's the thing I haven't done so far. So I just hope that we can switch to the computer. Okay. So. Right. So for this epsilon expansion, so just to have some definite example, I'm going to take. That's not so good. Should plug it in again. Good. Okay, just to save time, let's see. So this is, I'll just pull up this notebook, but we can look at it slowly. So here I have some typical Mellin-Barnes integrand now, which, as you can see, it depends on the integration level Z and on a parameter epsilon, which is the epsilon of dimensional regularization. Let me just quickly comment that there is a 1 over gamma of minus 2 epsilon in the denominator. This is exactly this kind of gamma which we discussed in the analytic continuation when you have a numerator. So it seems like naively when you put epsilon to 0 that this object just vanishes. But in fact it doesn't, because of these subtleties of the contours we've been discussing. And Now what we do first is we find an allowed set of contours, which we could use MB rules. There's an equivalent, more or less equivalent function, MB optimized rules, which I use here. And so there are two differences with respect to what we had before. One difference is that now there's an argument epsilon here, which tells MB rules that epsilon is not an integration variable. It's a parameter. And there's a second difference. This epsilon goes to 0 tells MB that later we want to take this limit epsilon goes to 0. Well, I guess that's less important at the moment. So we do this. Also, you might be worried by this error message here. Then if you read the documentation, you're told to ignore this error message. So I don't know why they actually have it. So you're allowed to ignore that. And so some other thing you observe, so epsilon is not put anywhere close to 0. It's put to some value which is allowed. And later we will do this analytic continuation. So actually, let's do that now. So as a function, the main function here is mbcontinue. Takes as argument the integral. And you specify the limit you want to take. And these rules we've just determined. So it's really easy. So let's just do this. And so now, in this example, actually, there are several residues which have to be taken. So this analytic continuation goes in several steps. And the outcome is these two integrals here. And so this is now, as I said, this is the step where everything is in a form where you can safely Laurent expand. And so in other words, you can take the limit epsilon to 0. Let me just ignore this. So there's a function mb preselect, which allows you to drop all terms which would vanish, which are higher orders in a Laurent expansion. So by doing this for here, I keep all terms which up to finite order in epsilon. So you see that doing this to the previous line, it already kills some terms. And you see that now this is actually, you see in this particular example, what's left is in fact a zero-dimensional integral. So there's no integral left. It's just some terms which are gamma functions. And now you can just Laurent expand these functions. There's a function MB expand which basically just does this with Laurent expansion. So if you do this here, I2exp. It just expanded it to the order 0. So now it's obviously in the form of a You can see it's obviously in the form of a Laurent expansion. And so we could pretty it up a little bit. So you can see explicitly that the leading divergence is a double pole and also what the finite terms are. But I guess I don't want to go into the details of this now. It's actually it's part of the second exercise on the exercise sheet. So maybe if you have, we can look at it in more detail later. But really, the key thing to remember is this function MB continue, MB continue is the main function, and then you have also MB expand, which is useful. All right. So I think that's a good point to stop probably. So thanks a lot.
Some small questions.
If I'm not mistaken, there are some rules that allow one to reduce the dimensionality of Mellin-Barnes integrals, Barnes lemmas.
Yes, absolutely.
Could you perhaps maybe briefly comment on them and when to apply them?
Uh-huh. Indeed. So sometimes there are... So I showed you several ways of reducing the dimensionality of integrals by picking residues, etc. But sometimes you're in a situation where you... Maybe you have a Mellin-Barnes representation which is not optimal. It's too high in dimension, and secretly it wants to be of lower dimension. And so in some cases you can apply identities which just remove one integration. And these go under the name of Barnes lemmas, as you said. There are two Barnes lemmas. I didn't have time to present them here, but actually it's a good comment that there is another package which is called Barnes routines, which is also on this web page, and it has these Barnes lemmas implemented, and there's a very convenient function. It's called do all Barnes on your list of Mellin-Barnes integrals, and it goes through them and tries very hard to apply the Barnes lemmas, and if it can, it will do them. And it's a little bit like full simplify, absolutely, yeah. Yes, indeed. So simplify, there's this, and there's MB merge is a very useful function, because typically you get lists of stuff, so you want to shuffle it all together and see if things simplify. Yeah.
Okay. Let's speak again.